We wanted to take a moment to thank the amazing folks who have sponsored our show this month. Their names are Daniel Fuentes,
Dan Snow,
Lucas Sink,
Andrew Richardson,
Jeffrey Risher,
Matthew Wood,
Mitchell McDonald,
Matt Fennell,
Michael J. Dargenio,
Zika's Viral Comics,
Chuck White,
Louis Roth,
Chris Weens,
Dennis Scott,
Victor Perez,
W. Blaine,
Aaron Miller,
D-Man Ryan,
Curtis LaRock,
Hugo Sanchez,
Jason Kelly,
and Michael Sturgeon. Thank you guys so much. If you would like to support the show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. And now, enjoy our live show.
Thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate it.
Cut that part.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to Comic Book Club Live. Please give it up for your hosts, Alex, Justin, and Pete.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man in the booth, Booth Man Prime.
Booth Man Prime.
What a man.
Gosh, you guys. What a big week. I don't know if you guys were in L.A. I was, of course, in L.A. for the Oscars this weekend.
I was at the Vanity Fair party the entire time.
Oh, I missed you. I missed you.
I stole Frances McDormand's Oscar.
Oh,
why
was
you?
That's crazy.
I know.
This was not a very big Oscars for superhero fare.
Well, I would say it was pretty big because at least Logan was
nominated.
I would say
you're wrong and you're stupid.
Well, I mean, compared to other years where there's nothing, sure. Logan was nominated for
also,
Best Adapted Screenplay.
They gave a shout out to Black Panther. That was pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that was pretty shocking. With it making $900 million?
Yeah. It's the biggest movie ever.
I do want to talk about the Wolverine thing for a second, Logan thing, because they read out the names of the folks who are nominated, and they shouted out John Romita Sr. and Len Wein.
Yeah.
Which I was really touched by.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, I know like they have to read the credits, but at the same time, I thought that was kind of wonderful that their names got read out at the Oscars.
It was, especially Len Wein just died like very recently, so that was like a nice testament that his name could be read.
Yeah,
it's fucked up. It didn't win though.
Fucked up.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
What do you think is the superhero movie that is going to finally like break the Oscars and win?
I really thought it was going to be Logan.
Yeah?
No. Yeah.
So you're, like, pretty upset.
Yeah, I'm very upset.
I think they're going to re-release the original Punisher.
The Dolph Lundgren
Oscar.
One?
The original.
That's the
original one.
Exactly. I know what the original one
is. Yeah, what's going to be crazy is when they have Best Picture and the Dolph Lundgren Punisher is nominated, the Thomas Jane Punisher is nominated,
as it's known,
and
the Thomas Jane.
Crazily enough, the John Bernthal Punisher, the series, is also going to be nominated for Best Picture, and, of course, Dirty Laundry, Thomas Jane's
short
movie.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'll go on that day, but I'll probably die a happy man.
Do you think all the Punishers could ever get in a room together and just, like, hash it out?
Wouldn't that be amazing? Like, I'd love to be a fly on the wall on that. You know?
Do you think Dolph Lundgren even knows he did that movie?
Of course he does.
Oh, okay. I don't know what... okay, great. Do you think Thomas Jane ever talks about it at the high-end restaurant he's waiting tables at?
Fuck you. Fuck you, dude.
High-end restaurant.
That's like a nice one.
It's a high-end restaurant.
That's
Jesus.
Fucked up, man.
Fine.
Fuck you.
Dining.
What's wrong with being a waiter? It's a respectable career.
I was a waiter for 10 years.
Yeah, I know you were.
Loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to do it now.
By the way, congratulations on your Punisher series.
Thank you. I hope Pete likes it.
Yeah.
It's all guys, squirt guns.
Speaking of the Punisher, except not at all, I'm very excited about the guest that we have on the show. He is the star of Amazon's The Tick.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Griffin Newman!
Yeah. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Come on up.
Have a microphone. Have a seat.
Hello.
Thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Of course. I apologize in advance for being a little tired. I just got back from the Oscars.
Oh, man.
I'm exhausted. I was at the Vanity Fair party.
Oh, we missed Justin.
Oh, yeah. I was a waiter, but...
Let's go. Man, great tips.
Can I complain about something for a second?
Of course.
That's why we have you here.
Yeah, let's great. Logan nomination.
Mm-hmm.
When it got the nomination, on the morning of the announcements, I feel like there's a thing in our culture now where unless you are the most something or the first something, the story feels like it won't matter. Like, everyone has to frame every event as some sort of record-breaking thing.
Yes.
Hyperbolically. Mm-hmm. And so everyone was screaming, like, it's the first comic book movie to be nominated for Best Screenplay. And then people were like, actually Ghost World. Yeah. So then everyone was like, it's the first superhero movie. And I was like, actually, The Incredibles. Yeah. So then everyone was like, it's the first Marvel Comics. And it's like, it's still impressive that it got nominated.
Yeah. It's still, it's we don't okay have to. On its own.
100%. Yeah. Right. It's kind of, I don't know. I feel like what we're all working towards ideally is for these movies to be at a level of quality and be perceived at a level of quality that it's not out of the ordinary. If one of them is exceptional, that it gets nominated. And the more you frame it as like, this is the only time.
Yeah. But just thank you for coming to the first comic book club in March. Yes. We've done it again.
And this is the most episode of all time. Right? Yeah. This is the number one most episode.
Doing
the
most.
It was on the cover of Variety.
It was. Huge. Yeah, Bafo.
So Bafo, Bix Tix, something.
What a shingle this is.
I'm going to ankle the scheme. Yeah,
the scheme.
So the last time we had you on, the Tick hadn't premiered. Now it's done with the first season.
Yeah.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Absolutely amazing. Exciting.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I pointed to Pete in particular, like, I love the series, big fan of the series.
Pete's been tweeting at me.
Has not shut up about it.
Yeah, Pete talks about it a lot.
I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So what was the experience like for you? Because you had already shot all of it, I think, by the time we had you on?
No,
the pilot.
The last time I was on, because Amazon, I guess this is kind of being shepherded out, but Amazon's process used to be that you would just do a pilot. They put the pilot out publicly, and they gauge the public response to see whether or not it would go to series. Mm-hmm. So we shot, I got cast, today's the 7th. Is that correct? March 7th?
We have no idea. Let me be honest.
I got cast on The Tick March 9th of 2016.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And episode 12 just came out. So it was like I got cast 2 Marches ago. Then we shot the pilot that summer. Then it didn't come out till that fall. Then we didn't get picked up till later that fall. Then we didn't start shooting until last March. And we shot 12 all in a row. Then 6 came out. Like, we wrapped episode 12 on a Friday, and that following Tuesday, we flew out for Comic-Con to promote the first 6.
Wow. No, that's just the way you want to do it.
It was perfect. It was perfect. There was one point at, like, one of those, like, interview runways where you're talking to a bunch of blogs where the guy clearly, just, you know, not I don't want to throw him under the bus. It wasn't that he hadn't done his research, but he just was talking to a lot of people. Yeah. So he cued to me, and he went like, hi, I'm here from nerdblog.org, and here I am talking to, and he pointed at me, and I couldn't remember my own name. I went, Griffin Newman.
That video got 100,000 views.
It's huge. Yeah. It was... got more views than the series. It's been nice now that like we had some time off, and then these episodes, which we shot a while ago, I get to take credit for them, even though I've had a lot of time to relax in between. And then we're gearing up to start filming again next month, about a month from today.
Oh, that's great. So this is jumping ahead, definitely, but how many episodes of the second season? When is it coming out? Do we know any details, anything like that?
10 and 2019.
Okay.
Those are the details.
So 2019 episodes premiering in 10 years.
Yes, correct.
That's awesome.
Correct.
All 15 hours long.
That is correct. But they'll all be in one batch this time.
Okay.
That's kind of the thing with streaming video is like every show is a guinea pig in some way or another because everyone's still trying to figure out this Wild West. So there are like reasons to try to split up the season, and I think they decided it's better to release it all. I don't know. It's weird because like...
I mean, there was kind of a plot split between the 6th episode and the
rest
of the episodes.
One thing new, it was a necessity. It was mandated by Amazon, but then once they knew that was going to be the breakdown, because Amazon had never done more than 10 episodes in a season. So they pitched this, what if instead of doing 10, we let you do 12, but we release them as 6 and 6. So they wrote it as 6 and 6. But it's weird. I don't know. Everyone watches TV differently now. Yeah. I take my time watching stuff. But there are the people who, like, you know, the 6 episodes went up, and then within 3 hours, I get tweets that are like, when's season 2 coming out?
Yeah. And, like, and you're like, oh, no, you just let that candy last a little longer. Yeah.
And it's also, it's not faster for us to make it is the problem, you know? Yeah. It's great that it's, like, faster and easier to watch, but it still takes time if you want it to be good. And even sometimes when it's bad, it takes time.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Well, let's
yeah.
talk about the show a little bit. What I thought sure. was so interesting, I mean, this is a little more of a Ben Edlund question, but the fact that he took the tick and has reinvented it so many different times, was it what you were expecting going in? I mean, it's, you knew the tick beforehand,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 0% what I was expecting. What, I mean, because they kept on... I was a really big fan. I got in through the Warburton show when that originally aired, and then when that ended very quickly, then I went back to the cartoons. I'd never really gotten to the comics until I started auditioning. But I kept on hearing those rumors that would circulate when Patrick Warburton would do press for something else, and he'd say, like, maybe the tick's coming back, maybe the tick's coming back. So it kept on seeming like it was going to be a straight continuation of the Fox sitcom. And then I got this email for, like, an audition, which I thought there was zero chance I could ever get, and also the details were very vague. So I cracked open the script expecting it to be exactly the same as that show and wondering why they were recasting Arthur, you know? And then the whole thing is so dramatically different. I can speak from my perspective, or rather from what I was tasked with, it simultaneously makes the job easier and harder. It makes it easier because you have license to totally do your own thing, because right. he's not asking you to sort of like replace someone midstream. Mm-hmm. And he wanted everyone to have authorship over their versions. And, you know, the cartoon show versions were different than the comic versions were different then. There's already precedent for him sort of shaking it up each time. This was a bigger shakeup. But then the scarier thing is you wonder if you'll somehow, in shaking it up, lose whatever those fundamental elements are. Because sometimes those are hard to gauge. You
yeah,
know?
Right.
Like, what's the breaking point where someone goes, I don't recognize that anymore?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I just went insane and got obsessive watching everything and rewatching and rereading everything to try to see if I could identify not the things to impersonate, but the things that I, as a fan, would have disapproved if I felt like there wasn't. They weren't present in the characterization.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a stressful process.
Yeah, I know. And I'm usually a very chill person. It was very unlike me to stress out about something.
I feel like that's something that I, as a viewer, was very cognizant of, particularly in the last couple episodes, mm-hmm. because they amp up the action exponentially. They amp up the emotion exponentially, yeah. which is very different from the sitcom version of the yeah. tick, or is different than the animated version.
Right.
But my feeling about it, and tell me if you disagree, but I think the tick is the thing that keeps it even.
Correct.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's sort of... Ben has this very bizarre brain where talking to him sometimes feels like he's psychologically existing in an alternate universe, and he's trying to, in this present form, translate to you what he's seeing.
Oh, wow.
But I feel like he's identified that there's something about that character that people really respond to, and to a lesser degree, the dynamic between the tick and Arthur. But there's something about the tick as a prism through which to view kind of superhero culture. Mm-hmm. And so he's really smart about every time he brings it back, sort of treating the tick like a funhouse mirror, and holding it up to whatever's going on in superhero culture at that time. But he's the thing that always stays the same, you know?
Right.
You have different actors playing him, but his characterization is very consistent. And you know, Arthur's a little more of a protagonist on this show. And the reason that happened, he says, is just literally through, like, process of elimination. Like, his challenge was, can I try to make a tick that has investable stakes? Like, a version of these characters that where you care emotionally and the fights have, you know, threats within them and all of that. And the tick can't change. Like, the tick can't go through an arc. The tick, by design, is always going to have the bullets bouncing off of him, you know? So then it has to be the person next to the tick who's figuring out how to deal with the tick.
But at the same time, I mean, this series does imbue the tick with a sense, yeah. with a search for himself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, Peter, who plays the tick, said, and I think this is really smart, that he views that arc, and I will be vague about it for people who haven't seen the half season, but that's also a thing that I think. When Ben went into Amazon, he pitched them 5 seasons.
Really? Wow.
And not like 5 seasons written. But he said, like, this is the arc of what I'd like to tell over 5 years if we could get through this.
Wow.
And had the basic sort of, like, this is kind of the saga I want to tell. And that sort of question of Tick's identity was one of the things, because it hasn't really been tackled before. In the comics, they did an arc that was much ballyhooed as, like, we're going to reveal Looney Bin, I think it was a miniseries that was, we're going to reveal the Tick's origin. And the reveal was, we don't fucking know where he came from. The reveal is they go to the mental hospital that he broke out of, and they're like, we thought he was this other guy. But I think Peter said the way he approached that in playing it is that... the thing that the Tick realizes in this version that he hasn't realized in other versions is that he's supposed to care about that.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, he's in a more serious show. So he suddenly starts to go, am I supposed to have a backstory? Am I supposed to have an inciting incident?
He accidentally walked past a regular mirror.
Right.
As opposed to a funhouse mirror. He's like, oh, no, that's me.
Right. So I'm not the creator of the show. I'm not the writer of the show. A thousand things could change. But I think... what this version is less interested in is trying to get to a didactic answer about who the Tick is or what he is or where he came from, and more about him coming to some sort of sense of understanding and comfort within the world. Because, I know, Peter always says the Tick's sort of just begotten, you know? He's like, you can't imagine him ever not existing in any universe, and every time he's been introduced in any version, he just kind of shows up.
And
you don't know how long he's been the Tick.
Well, one of the things that is also very cool about this version, and that I want to talk about Arthur and your character and your experience a little bit more, but his connection to Arthur, the fact that Arthur is the person that keeps him even, which is kind of fascinating dynamic to watch, again, as a viewer.
Yeah. It is like, I mean, they obviously have this like classic comedy duo thing where they're sort of opposites. But I think... the thing we tried to get at with this version is them not being opposites just for the sake of, like, comedic contrast, but making them kind of a yin and yang. Like, they're each half a functional person. Arthur's internal life is pretty strong. He is not very good at actually acting in any sort of external way.
Right.
And the Tick's the exact opposite. He's like a golden retriever who's just like chasing whatever scent he catches.
Yeah.
And he's unstoppable. And so it's like we're two kids stacked on top of each other in a trench coat. And we have to figure out how to coordinate our limbs, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fun to play because it becomes this like... you know, it's like... the show's like a love story, I think. I really feel like it's like this romantic comedy of like... getting to this point where I'll get asked this question of like, do you feel like in this version you're the sidekick or he's the sidekick? And it's like it kind of, I mean, I think it can be viewed either way. I think it depends on the circumstance or whatever the immediate challenge is. If it's more verbal, he's the sidekick. You know, if it's more physical, I'm the sidekick. But it's more just the notion of like, these are two people who need each other.
Yeah,
yeah, they're both saying yes to each other. It's a struggle for them to say yes to each other.
Right, sort of. Right. And that's the really fun, exciting thing for me is like, I feel like in these new six episodes that came out, and we knew this was where we were going, but there were 6 months in between people seeing them.
so many comments in that
time. Which is like a little nerve-wracking where it's like, maybe you'll hate us in 6 months, but can you just wait until then to definitively hate us? But it felt like, you know, trying to get to a point where we really earned that sense of teamwork.
Right.
You know, that like partnership between the two of them because... they've conclusively learned they can't survive without each other. So it's exciting for me when I see like the stuff, especially I think in our final episode of season one, when it's like, this is like Tick and Arthur, like totally collaborating in a way that feels like every version of Tick and Arthur I've loved in the past.
That's the way we
Which
are.
Which isn't me to pat myself on the back.
No, you should.
Right, yeah.
But that's the way we are with each other as well.
Yes.
Like, just we're, except it's a we're taller child.
It's even harder because each of you only has one third of a functional person.
And honestly, we're barely.
Yeah.
That's like a high bar.
Legal.
I was wondering about, like, were there stuff that you were worried about having to do? Like, are you scared of heights? Or are there things in the script where you're like, holy shit, how am I going
to
do this?
I just want to frame this in. We're an Ellen-type show, so if you're afraid of something, maybe it's going to come out later.
I'll see what I get that comparison so much.
Yeah, the honest answer is I'm afraid of everything.
Right.
And I don't deal with stress very well. And playing Arthur on the Tick is a very stressful situation. it was just like a lot more responsibility than I had ever had as an actor in a far more complicated show. So I just kind of, I'm very good as someone who has struggled with chronic anxiety, you know, my entire life at sort of like harnessing that mother with the child, you know, trapped under the rock sort of energy to like time shift my panic attacks till once I get home. So it's like everything
this is your
feels...
actor's process. I love
that's like, my actor's process.
Time shift your anxiety.
It's like the end of Avengers when Banner says like, you want to know my secret? I'm always angry. Yeah. I'm that way with anxiety. So like that's my sort of driving force, and I am equally terrified of everything.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, I sort of just like lay it all out, and I go like, I can't believe you did that. You know?
If but you're I'm, terrified of yeah. everything, then you're terrified of nothing.
That's kind of true. That's kind of true. But it is like every single thing has an equal amount of power to ruin the show that they ask me to do. You know what I'm saying? So it's like when they're asking me to do something that's like physically demanding, it's like this has as much weight behind it as just a line that I can't figure out how to deliver properly.
But well, on the opposite end of the spectrum, sure. Was there any point when you were like, oh shit, I am a superhero? When it actually felt like that, even for a brief second?
Yeah, I mean, it's like we shot it all here in New York, and we yeah. shot a lot of it, especially a lot of the action sequences happen on the street. And it is bizarre when you're standing in the middle of, like, public streets of New York City dressed like a superhero.
Streets you know. Like, you've been to some of these
yeah.
locations.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Arthur's apartment on the show and that sort of block that we shot, most of the sort of stuff immediately outside the apartment where there are action scenes, there are entrances and exits, there are dramatic scenes, all sorts of stuff, was my old subway stop.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
You know, it was like that was the corner of my express stop where I always used to go, and now I'm standing on that corner and people are angry that I'm getting in the way of them being able to get yeah. to their apartment.
I bet.
That's a New York story right there. That's a New York story.
But it is, I mean, people were far less impressed with me when the Tick was standing next to me because he's so much more super heroic.
Yeah,
right.
And Peter would, if kids walked by especially, stay in the voice.
Really? Nah.
Which would like, you know, it was kind of amazing watching kids walk by and just feel like, oh my God, my parents were lying. Superheroes are real.
Yeah.
You know? Like that's kind of crazy. But it's even, people would recognize the Tick. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't recognize me as much because like the series hadn't come out. My costume was different enough. But the yeah. Tick is sort of so iconic and elemental just in his design that we'd sometimes have takes ruined because people would like walk by when the camera was rolling or drive by and roll down the window and be like, looking good, Tick. And no one's supposed to know who we are. But
classic New York stereotype. Yeah. Like, yeah. Huge Tick fan.
And literally those voices. Like, yeah, exactly. All, like, you know, Bowery kids, like, Bowery yeah, boys, yeah. Like, stereotype voices. But there is, like, an iconography to standing in the middle of a city street next to, like, a burning car wearing a jumpsuit. And people kind of, like, it's bizarre. Yeah.
So what funny. Can you tease about season two, if anything? What's coming up?
Very little. I mean, like, I, you know, about a month ago, went to the writer's room and had Ben try to explain to me what was being teed up. And about a week from tomorrow, I fly out to L.A. to do, like, the network table read of however much of season one they have done, which will hopefully be the majority of it. And I expect that 75% of it will have changed when I see the stuff next. But I think, you know, it's... I think season one was trying to kind of do the math to get to the point where the Tick and Arthur are at the status quo level that they've been in every other previous incarnation. Yeah. And hopefully now we're at that status quo level with a little more investment behind it. So I think it's going to be the Tick and Arthur, I will, in the most broad tease imaginable, I think it's going to be the Tick and Arthur, you know, coming to terms with being everyday heroes now.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of these weird sort of outsider figures working
awesome.
On the fringes. Yeah.
Cool. This is a total dumb geek out question. I'm
Please.
Just curious. Just granted, you were in a superhero show, but was there any moment where you're like, oh, I'm in a scene with a guy who's in the Nova Corps and a guy who is in Watchmen?
Yeah. But I also just, I would have that moment just going, I'm in a scene with the Tick. You know, like it's not like he's a method actor, but Peter's such a good actor, and I feel like he embodies the Tick so thoroughly
yeah.
that there'd be these moments where it was just like, It feels like you're at Disney World at one of those character breakfasts or whatever. And you're like, oh, my God,
that's
Donald
the highest
Duck's doing
compliment.
The move. Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's very bizarre. But certainly, I mean, both of those guys I'm like massive, massive fans of and a lot of different things. It's very weird. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the job of an actor is to not freak out about who you're doing scenes with.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
And I'm like certainly I'm a guy who like a lot of my favorite actors are like weird character actors. Mm. So even when I was just like slumming it for 10 years doing like Spanish romantic comedies that went like straight to Delta Airlines, I'd be like, this is the voice of Pumbaa, you know? And I'd just like be freaking out about working with that guy. Yeah. So it's like that you have to first act like you aren't totally overwhelmed by sharing scenes with those people and then have to act like you are the person they paid you to pretend to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Jackie Earle Haley, did he blow out his voice? Because I was worried about him the entire series.
My ex-girlfriend is a speech pathologist, and that was her first question after watching the series. Is he okay? Does he do exercises? Yeah. How
if
much
you
of that is processed?
The series, he has the terror. He does his voice. It's very scratchy.
Very bizarre. And I don't totally understand how he does it. And he does that a lot. Because his voice is very, like, he's like this SoCal guy. He just goes, like, yeah, you know, geez, I mean, it's hard work, but I can't complain. I got a pretty cushy schedule. And then, like, when you know, action is called, he goes into this insane sort of, like, totally, it sounds like someone's stepping on his throat at all times.
Yeah.
You can hear the tension in what he has to do to get that voice. But I think he's been doing it for so long. He has such an innate understanding of how to sort of manage his energy and all of that as an actor in a way that I don't. I will totally blow myself out too early doing something, especially with stunt stuff. And then they'll be like, you're not on camera for this one. You don't have to keep hitting your head. but he's really good about sort of like saving it. But the funny thing there is he will never not give a performance that isn't like 100% in terms of energy and emotion. But if the camera's not on his mouth, he won't do the voice. Mm. So a lot of times you'll be doing terror scenes where he'll be doing the dialogue just as himself.
In a chill SoCal.
Right, he's like, I'm going to scoop out your eyeballs. And he's still got like spittle flying. He's got the makeup on and everything. But he's like, he makes it count for when he needs to totally go full force, you know?
Yeah. Since it is a totally different take on Tick, there's a bunch of things, a bunch of characters that are different. Mm-hmm. Is there any character or idea from the past Ticks that you particularly lobbied for that you really want to bring back?
I if I can give myself credit, there is one scene that has existed in every single version of the Tick. And it was not in the script when I got cast, and I lobbied to put it back in.
Because
I thought it was a really nice through line, but Ben doesn't care about that because he likes reinventing stuff. So I had to sell it, which was fair, as I think this is the best way to establish the dynamic between the two of them, which is a scene in the pilot when he shows up at my apartment unawares and starts breaking everything in my apartment looking for the switch to my secret lair.
Yeah.
He's looking for the, Adam West Batman activator. And it's been in every single version. And I just felt like that was one of those scenes, especially because the pilot doesn't have a lot of the two of us together. Mm-hmm. And I knew we were only going to get a season depending on how people responded to that.
Yeah.
Originally, when I auditioned, the Tick and Arthur had one scene together. Rest of the pilot, they were all apart. And Ben sort of said to me, I feel like there has to be another scene with the two of you guys together because the two of you are good, and I want to have a scene where you're kind of getting into it. And I said, I know you're going to hate this, but you should do the co-hook scene.
That's awesome, though. That's...
Yeah, and then I sort of sold it to him. But it feels like that scene sort of captures the energy perfectly of the Tick just confidently walking around this environment he's never been in before, 100% assured that he understands the rules of this place. And Arthur having to literally clean up his messes. There are a lot of characters I'm constantly lobbying for, and I don't want to... he's very offended that I have not succeeded so far.
How dare you?
I I'm still fighting the good fight, so I don't want to push any of them.
All right.
And Ben's sort of elusive. There's one guy I feel like I can confidently say I push really hard for because I love. He's my favorite character in the entire Tick mythos, and I'm just constantly arguing with Ben to just put him in for like one scene. He's like an under five. You don't have to write a plot line around him. I don't think he's in the cartoon. He's only in the comic, I believe, but it's a plot line that's in both, where the Tick and Arthur go to the nightclub for superheroes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being introduced to all the heroes around the table. And there's one guy, a sort of paunchy guy in like a classic Superman style, you know, cape, tighty whities jumpsuit, and with a comb over and like a grimace. And he's like this. And he goes, "Who's that guy?" And they go, "That's Hand Grenade Man." And they go, "What's his power?" And they go, he's got a hand grenade. He goes, "That's it." And he goes, "You'd be surprised what you can get done with a hand grenade." And he comes back one issue later, but the entire idea of this character is he's a dude who's got the promise of one time he can let go of this thing and totally settle an issue. And it could even, it's a featured extra. You don't even have to give the guy dialogue. Ideally, it's Paul Giamatti. That's what I'm lobbying
in
for.
Dream world.
But I'm constantly saying, like, hand grenade guy, one, you don't even have to call him out. Just put him in there. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Write Amazon. Let them know you want
hand grenade.
Stunt casting. Paul Giamatti's here tonight.
Is on Amazon now, so check it out. It's awesome. We're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah.
And in The Stack, we talk about a couple of comic books that came out this week. We'll jam through them pretty quickly for you guys. Let's talk about Thanos, number 16 from Marvel Comics. You guys have been loving this one.
Now, Pete, this is especially important because... This issue is the backstory of the Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Right. Who is also Punisher.
Who starts as the Punisher and then goes through a bunch of changes.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I might hate this. But I was kind of like, oh, you know, like, I think there's fun in this comic. And I think that comes across. So it's hard to get upset at some of the choices.
So you don't mind him transforming into Ghost Rider and then a Cosmic Ghost Rider and then the black right hand of Thanos.
Yeah. I mean, normally I might be upset. But
because he's a villain.
It's an Ultimates version. And it's, I think... There's so much fun in this comic that I don't mind some of the things.
You don't make any sense, but that's fine.
This is really enjoyable. It's a lot of fun. It's a good comic book. Here's my one little nitpick with it. So last issue we talked about when they revealed that Frank Castle was the Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Right.
It was a surprise because Cosmic Ghost Rider is this chill, funny dude.
He's like Deadpool for space.
Exactly. He's space Deadpool. He's super skinny. Doesn't look anything like
super
Frank Castle.
Super skinny?
Yeah. He's also like a very skinny guy where Frank Castle is like, I ate a tank earlier today.
Oh, wow. What a weird focus on that.
Well, I'm saying art-wise, he looks different. So we were like, okay, what's the
slimming jacket? It's more of a leather sort of.
That's true.
There's
it is a
buckles.
Different jacket. I don't know much about fashion.
Plus,
so.
Fire burns up.
Yeah, when
fat.
You're on fire, it really burns
it?
Fat.
Yeah, it's like a
I
candle.
Should set myself on fire.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great way to lose weight.
10 fire pounds.
That's why people say burn off the pounds.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know that. All right, after the show, I'll set myself on fire.
Yeah. Okay.
So
wait.
My point, though, is we were talking about, okay, next issue they're going to talk about the transition, how he goes from Frank Castle to Cosmic Ghost Rider, how he goes from the I'm going to punish everything to whatever, dude. And in this issue, he's Frank Castle. He makes a deal with the devil. Time passes, and then he's just like that.
I think
it's one of those things where as time goes on, they talk about how he's lost his mind because he's the only guy left on Earth.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like he gets kookier.
And I get it. Like, that kind of makes sense. But at the same time, it's like, and here's why he talks this way. There's not enough of an explanation or a transition there.
Really. I will say, to Alex's point, based on that, it could have been literally anyone in the Marvel Universe, and it would have been the same thing.
Right.
It could have been Paste Pot Pete, and he's like, I'm crazy now.
Exactly, exactly. So, again, the art is great. The issue is a ridiculous amount of fun.
Yeah.
So this brings up, if I can establish a new gripe corner.
Yeah, sure.
For God's sakes.
Because...
it's all gripe corners on this show.
Right. Three of the four comics we're talking about today hit this thing that I feel very conflicted about, which I feel like mainline Marvel has become mostly centered around character mashups.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I tend to be... I was mostly a trade paperback guy. I kind of transitioned to wean myself off of single issues a while ago, and now I'm like a Marvel Unlimited guy, so I'm reading single issues but at a delay. And so there are all these things that I kind of miss where I spent like 4 years resisting Spider-Gwen. Because I just went, like, that can't be good. That's such
Thank
a sweaty
you.
Concept.
Yes.
And I read it, and Thank it's you. Well executed, and it's a good characterization. But it gets into this zone where I start to go, why can't this just be a new, different character?
Right.
Especially if you're moving it so far away from the original characterization. And it starts to feel like, you know, we've always had Marvel alternate universe versions of these characters.
Right.
And we've also always had different people taking certain mantles. Mm-hmm. But this notion of let's literally like mush together these two sort of titles and the iconography and all that kind of stuff, even though they keep on executing it well, kind of just bums me out because it feels
you want some newness.
So cyclical. Yeah.
So let's transition into talking about Spider-Gwen number 29 a bit, because that's what this issue
is
about.
This is hat on a hat on a hat. Yeah. I mean,
it's all hats.
So it's the
Gwen no as Spider-Man as Venom.
Well, but even beyond that, this issue has the Watchers talking about how ridiculous this world is.
Which I think is smart and well done. Yeah. I give them props for calling it out well, but it also is the one thing they keep on doing in all of their titles.
They call it at some point, they're like, it's messy karaoke, which is absolutely correct. Like, I think you're right. It's a lot of fun. It's the art, again, is really good. I've really enjoyed the Spider-Gwen comic book. But there's something about it where I can never tell whether it's my comic book fandom or my critical faculties where I'm like, why can't you just do the simpler thing? Why are you overcomplicating this so much?
Well, I would say for Spider-Gwen specifically, this universe and this title is crazy. Like, the way they tell the story and the art specifically speaks to this, like, it's wild. The writing is a little bit sort of disjuncted and, like, poetic in a weird way. There's a lot of characters are bad and then good. The Punisher's in this. He's like on the team with Spider-Gwen in this, but he's sort of a monster also. So I like that this is taking, even though it is a mashup, it's still taking a lot of creative chances, which is why I appreciate this.
I agree with that 100%. And I think that they're owning everything more thoroughly. But I like equate it to, I've gotten to this point where like the Stan Lee cameos in the movies feel like eating Taco Bell to me. Where like when he comes on screen, I laugh. And then 5 minutes later, I feel like I'm going to have diarrhea. Like it just doesn't sit super well to me.
Sure.
And it feels like it's this sort of high five on like trying to validate people for knowing everything.
Yeah.
Which first of all, let's acknowledge we're all super cool for knowing all this stuff.
That's why we're here. Oh,
I'm glad you brought that up.
But like something like Gwenpool, which is like the one now where I'm like, come on, there's no way that can be good. And everyone's like, it's good. It's good. It's well written. It's well drawn. It's good. I'm just like, but does it gain anything from handshaking those corners? Can't it just be wholly its own new thing? Because I wonder, like, if people trying to get in, not to be this guy, but like the kids who are trying to pick up things from the shelves right now.
Yeah. Oh, no way.
It's like, you know, are these strong entry point characters?
Definitely.
Or is half of the juice just knowing the six things that they're riffing off of and building off of?
I think Thanos is a little more on that end of what you're talking about than Spider-Gwen is.
I'm opening a big umbrella to an entire conversation here.
Because Spider-Gwen is, I think, the rare exception where it almost, yes, they're talking about Frank Castle. Yes, it's Matt Murdock. Yes, it's riffs on those characters. Yeah. But they make sure that it doesn't really matter that you know any of that other
because
stuff.
Because also, even if you know, it's still confusing and you have to pay attention. Yes. Like, it's not like you need to know. It's sort of like, oh, if you know, then this is a little more interesting maybe. But it's just weird and wild to any reader.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this one because I'm curious to hear what you think about this. All new Wolverine number 31, also from Marvel Comics.
Just for the record, Spider-Gwen just pissed me off. I didn't enjoy it.
But you love Venom.
I do love Venom.
Because I'll tell you what, I'm sick of Venom. Venom's everywhere now. We're too many Venoms. We've overdone Venom.
Oh, you're over Venom?
Done with Venom. Venom's in X-Men Blue right now. There's like 50 Venoms. There's Poisons, which is like Venom but bad, worse.
Yeah, little monster Venom.
Yeah, don't like that. I'm sick of it.
Okay. I'll say this. Like,
it's just paint.
In the same way that I feel that the classic Spider-Gwen costume is the best alternate Spider-Man costume design I've ever seen, The Gwenom design is also like, I am so over symbiotes. It's a pretty good design.
Let me just say, the fact that you have said the sentence, the classic Spider-Gwen design, shows how through the looking glass. We're so through the looking glass.
Yeah.
You're in too deep.
Cool. All new Wolverine is really good. Let's move on because we are going to run out of time. Saga number 49 from Image Comics. It's finally back. There is a dick on the first page, so you know Saga is back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
They were really like, we're back. Yep. And it was immediately like, I'm reading on the subway. I'm like, oh, God. Fucking Saga, you son of a bitch.
I was reading the subway, and I was like, no. Everyone should see this.
I storybooked it.
Yeah, I was like, guys, this comic is good. Yeah. Take a look. Read it aloud. Everyone clapped.
Oh,
they
loved it. That's crazy.
Yeah,
wow.
People pulled out their dicks.
Wow. Yeah. Well, what train are you on?
It's a pretty crazy train.
Are you sure that was related?
No, I actually think it was unrelated. It was it was like 4 a.m.
Okay.
Cool. This comic is great. I don't even know what do we say about it at this point other than it's great and this issue was great.
Yeah, but it's also like sad and powerful. I
we
mean,
say
it's
that
so
about
much...
every issue.
What I think is interesting, what struck me about this issue is this is a tense read. Every week, every month, it's a tense read. Like you feel like something bad is coming for our characters, and this picked up after like a 3-4 month break, and the tension has not diminished at all. Oh. It is a stressful but enjoyable comic to read.
Yeah.
I mean, that last page in particular, which we won't spoil. I mean, I freaked out about it because it definitely. We talked about this, despite the fact that they were like wolf people and evil ghosts for the past couple of issues. It's been kind of smooth sailing for them for a little while. This is bringing them back into the mix of everything that's been going on to the universe and making things as bad as they possibly can be.
Yeah, the threat of the last page that you're talking about is it's a living nightmare.
Cool.
I also think this issue, and it's like thin ice that a lot of weaker creators have tried to skate on, gets into a really good conversation about in this modern era of like identity politics and trying to destroy these sort of like societal norms that we've held on to of binary places you have to fit into. How do you want to raise your child? You know, how much do you want to enforce on them versus let them decide? You know, and that comes from a place of how much do you want to try to shield your child from danger. I mean, in like 3 pages, Vaughn does what like Seth MacFarlane got raked over the coals for like improperly doing for 50 minutes on an episode of The Orville, you know?
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah. It's well written. Yeah. He's a smart guy.
No, it's great.
That's a great comparison. Yes. And I got to say, I bet you're the only one making it. You may be the only person reading Saga and watching Orville.
I'm no longer watching The Orville.
You're a huge Orville guy.
I'm an Orville head.
Yeah, that's what everybody knows you for.
Yes, for watching The Orville. I write Orville recaps on Vulture.
Definitely check those out as well. And that's really it for the stack.
Yeah.
All right, guys, it's time for your next section, which is my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions.
Woo-hoo.
Now, for that, all you have to do... Oh, my God.
God. What a tragedy.
...is ask a question. You're going to bring in some free comics. I saw this hand shoot up first. You, sir, what's your name? What's your question?
My name is Kevin. I was going to ask about mashup characters, but I don't think I will do that now.
Nice.
Thank you for adjusting accordingly.
So, to go a bit serious, you were talking about, you know, anxiety. What do you think are some, you know, are the best explorations of something like that in, say, comics?
Anxiety in comics, that's good. For a while anyway, wasn't the most recent iteration of Totally Awesome Hulk about anxiety? Or no, sorry, of She-Hulk, the Hulk book, was about anxiety in a way that I thought was really interesting.
Particularly
like a traumatic event and dealing with the anxiety of having gone through that and losing a friend and all of that. I thought that was really great.
Yeah, that was particularly the first arc drilled down on that quite a bit. After that, it ranged around a little bit.
Yeah.
But that series was great. Pete, you got an answer for this one?
I'm thinking.
Okay. Griffin?
I've always liked Nightcrawler a lot in that regard because I feel like he's a dude. I mean, it more or less in different, you know, incarnations, different writers' takes on it, but a dude who deals with his anxiety by being really performative in a way that I relate to as a comedian. and non-superhero territory. Nate Powell's Swallow Me Whole, I think, is like a really good book about like teenage anxiety and depression and all of that.
That's cool. The interesting take on Nightcrawler, because I think feel like most people would be like, oh, that guy's fun all the time. But you're right. He has a lot of stress about his appearance and also his faith, I think, in the comics.
Both.
A ton of, like, where he's sort of hiding it a lot and then sort of overexpressing
his
it in a performative way.
His relations to the other characters. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what I was like in high school. I was so anxious that instead I turned everything into, like, I was like Nightcrawler. I just jumped around a lot and irritated people. And my
teleported.
Face was blue. Yeah.
A lot of brimstone.
Yeah.
I think what's nice about comics is it is a medium that can explore things like that in different creative ways. And I Kill Giants is a great example of, like, you know, when someone has a big death or something that kind of weighs on them, that they kind of manifest it in different creative ways.
Obviously, I think everyone would get on board with Penance being a great example of that.
That is not a good call.
Great. Great question. Let's take another one. You, sir, right there. Come on down. What is your name and what is your question?
My name is Sean, and my question is, would have you preferred the Tick to have the viewing model of streaming services where viewers binge, or traditional broadcast sequential weekly broadcasts?
Oh, wow.
And he's a reporter at Variety.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. You could tell by the way he was reading that off that it was very...
That's a very specifically worded question.
Yeah.
The views reflected by this individual do not... stand for the views of any networks or production companies. I prefer one week at a time stuff. I and it's just me and how my brain works. I would never try to throw out a decree to change it, because obviously a lot of people like binge watching stuff. But I like being able to watch an episode and spend, even when there is stuff, seasons that I, you know, have been up that I'm binge watching, I tend to only watch one episode a day. Because I like taking a little time to stew on an episode.
To think about it.
It's the same thing with comics, with single issue comics, where it's like you want to kind of spend the month going, like, where are they going next, you know?
That I love that.
Yeah.
But that's the opposite of kind of what you were talking about, because you were saying you're reading graphic novels. Yeah.
But even still, I'll read, like, one volume, and I, you know, got to wait for the next volume to come out, or for Marvel Unlimited to, you know, hit the three-week limit on whatever the next issue is or what have you.
But what I think sucks about the binging is that we don't talk about each individual episode.
Yeah.
We talk about the whole season that way.
Yeah.
And I think what stinks is when you're binging something, you kind of talk about things in general instead of specifics, where if it was, you know, like a week in between, we could talk about it a little bit more.
I agree with that. And I'll say a big pet peeve of mine, a thing that bums me out, not to keep overusing that term, is when people refer to collections of a run as a graphic novel.
Yeah. Right.
You know, because it's like there's a difference between something that was designed as a graphic novel versus something that's compiled into a collection.
Yeah.
Because the beauty is the art of each issue, hopefully building to something bigger, but having its own kind of shape to it. You know, I love in sort of ongoing series when you have one oddball issue that focuses on a whole different corner, or a different character, or a different style, when they do those fill-in issues with a different team, you know?
Jumping back to television off that, Noah Hawley on Fargo talks a lot about how he would insert, especially the second season, would insert moments in, like, montages or a different style of storytelling just to break up the binge.
Yeah.
So people can sort of be rattled out so that he can show, like, hey, this next part's important, so it's not just, like, an episode you can just keep watching like you watch the news. It's you have to pay attention and engage.
On the other end
of the spectrum, though, and this isn't true of every single show, but a lot of binging shows have rewarded people for binging where they don't concentrate on the individual episode, which drives me nuts, personally.
Drives me nuts. And I also just feel like if you're trying to make a six-hour movie, then make a six-hour movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
I think ideally it's like you want the sum of the parts to be greater, but you also want each part to have its own integrity.
Yeah. So just do everything at once and be great.
Yeah, just be the best.
Awesome. Cool. We can take another question. You, sir, saw your hand over there. Come on down. What's your name and what is your question?
I am Pablo. Nice. Hello, guys.
Hello. What's up, Pablo?
In relation to the first gentleman's question, as far as comics and of media in general, what is the most fulfilling comic that stimulated your mind, that brought a lot of emotions to you?
Well, that's a good question. I would say Bookkeeper for me, because it was written by... Book Hunter, sorry. Thank you. It was written by a math genius who then later came out with another book that was kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure that made my brain hurt. But I think for realistically, it's when you can tell the writer is writing from something that they're passionate about that kind of pulls you into a world. That's my kind of favorite stuff. When you can kind of tell that this writing is meaning more than what you're seeing on the page.
Nice.
I don't know. I almost feel like it's two different questions, like what stimulates you intellectually versus what stimulates you emotionally. Yeah. Like when you said the emotional part, the first thing my brain always goes to, for whatever reason, is Superman for All Seasons by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. Mm-hmm. There's this two-page spread in particular where Superman is standing in the field at his parents' house that is one of the most beautifully painted things I've ever seen. And I remember just turning to that page and stopping and being shocked. But at the same time, I don't think it has stimulated me intellectually in the same way. This is probably a little bit of a weird answer, but Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, in a way. Seriously, okay. Just like there's great science stuff in there, but it's also such a dense book, so much denser than you would expect it to be, both in terms of the structure of the jokes, the structure of the pages, and the amount of things that are going on in every issue. It's really, it feels like a refresher for my brain every single issue that I read.
I'm going to throw out a sort of deep cut. There's a limited series I think Peter David did called Aquaman Time and Tide. It was a four-issue series back in the day. And I feel like that was a great combination of emotional and intellectual stimulation into just and telling a great story that was able to combine both. Love that.
Cool.
In the superhero realm, the Alan Moore Swamp Thing run
that's a great
for
answer.
Me is like aesthetically really beautiful, has real emotional sort of depth to it, but intellectually, both between what is happening in the story and what he's doing with the form kind of just like lights me up. And I also love Craig Thompson's stuff.
Oh,
Habibi, I think, is super underrated.
Yeah.
And is like a brick of a book where every 30 pages, it totally changes what you think you're reading.
He just re-released Carne de Voyage, I think. And I have the original, but I haven't checked out the new one yet. I'm very excited.
He re-released it with new stuff.
I think so, yes.
Interesting. There is one panel in Carne de Voyage that made me break down crying the first time read it. And I've never had that. I maybe one other comic has made me cry. It takes a while, but there was one thing in Carne de Voyage that just like destroyed me. But I think he's got this sort of like there's like a fluidness to his art style. It almost looks like you're reading animation.
Yeah, and it feels very raw. It feels very real and connected to him
the
in a weird way.
The fact that he's
way.
Drawing and writing. Yeah. I feel that way with Jeff Lemire's stuff as well. That it just feels like, especially his indie sort of, the stuff he draws as well, feels very straight shot from like his brain and his heart. That stuff usually gets to me.
What was the thing that made you cry?
So in Carne de Voyage, he's on the press tour promoting Blankets.
Yeah.
And I read Blankets, devoured it in one evening, was like totally shaken up by it, and then went out and bought every other thing he had ever written. And I'm reading it at Carne de Voyage, and I'm like, okay, so that's him. Like, I read it when I was the age he was in the book. Clearly, he's over this girl. He's married now. He has, I think, a child at that point.
Yeah.
And then there's one entry in Carne de Voyage where he says, had another dream about Raina last night.
Yeah.
And the idea that he still has active dreams about this person he dated when he was 16 years old.
And then you see the dream, right?
You see the dream, which is also the image is like beautiful. Yeah. But the notion that he's not like, I'm still in love with her,
right.
But that these things do continue to be like a part of your life if they're that emotionally resonant for you. Yeah.
Cool.
He's a good artist.
Very, yeah.
he's good at what he does.
Griffin, you're crying
very
right
excited.
Now.
I think we could take one more question. You, sir, right there, come on up or come on down, I guess. What's your name? What's your question?
My name's Hugo.
What's up, Hugo?
Hey, man. I love the tick. It's
Thank
awesome.
You very much.
So you guys remember...
Oh, and he's wearing an Orville
shirt.
Oh!
Yeah, are you
it's
a fan
Seth
of...
Seth MacFarlane. He's pretending. You...
hilarious.
So, you remember when DC let people vote for whether Robin was going to live or die?
Yeah.
Jason Todd, right? So is there an event that you would like to have voted for, to have been able to vote for?
Oh, nice. Yes.
Right. Great question.
I would have liked to have voted for Spider-Man making a shitty deal with the devil.
How do you think you would have voted?
I think you know how I would have voted.
Would you have voted for Mephisto to take away the marriage or not?
Let me ask you this, Pete. Do you think you could have, like, really engaged politically and gotten enough votes to really get your side?
Would you have stumped?
Yeah.
I think I could have, started a whole Twitter war about it and, hopefully taken down.
So, actually,
awful
I know
choice.
We've been talking about this for, I think, 46 years now. Yeah. But if you could have actually voted for that, the choice would have been, do you want Spidey and MJ to no longer be married, or do you want Aunt May to die?
Yeah, Aunt May to die. Not even.
Oh, he was
thought.
Setting that as more of a moral choice, and you would like cut right through.
Well, at that point, they had written it up to that was the real choice, and then they made a shitty deal with the devil and kind of got both things.
Right, but I'm asking you, would you choose Aunt May dies in that scenario?
Yeah.
Narratively, Aunt May dying is progressive, and the MJ marriage being retconned out is regressive.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we should throw Aunt May literally under the bus, but I hated that arc. The other one that comes to mind, another Amazing Spider-Man arc that drove me insane that I would vote against. Do you remember the one, I think from around 2004, where it was revealed that Gwen Stacy was impregnated by Norman Osborn with the
father.
I hated that.
Yeah
that I wish that like, never happened.
Yeah that was definitely like a ruining.
Goblin babies.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. They were super excited because the babies at that point.
Twins,
were,
right?
Right. They're twins, and it had only technically been like 8 years, but they were his age.
They were
because
aged
they were super
up
babies.
And
and they
the
were
girl
like Twilight
baby,
babies.
Naturally grew Gwen Stacy's headband.
Yeah, right. The headband was a part of her biology. Yeah. Hated that.
Made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think that what's nice about the voting idea is that we, the people, could have saved some horrible things from happening.
Yeah.
I guess my whole thing would be just to cancel out Pete's vote on everything. Because I want these people to tell their stories.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of telling stories, we're going to move on to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Pete LePage, the star of trivia.
Yeah. So this part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. It's an opportunity to win $25 free dollars in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Yeah, $25. You go to comic book shop. Yes, you, sir. Come on up.
All right. Here you go. Take this microphone.
All right. So today's trivia is on the tick. It's tick trivia. And as long as you watched every show, you'll be fine. What is your name, sir?
Kevin.
Kevin, audience, Kevin. You're rooting for Kevin, okay? All right, here we go.
Oh, wow.
Question number one. The voice of the tick in the animated series, Townsend Coleman, he plays the voice of who in the new Amazon series? Is it A, Midnight, B, Danger Boat, or is it C, Colonel Sanders? So it's either A or it's B.
I'm going to go with Midnight.
Yes. That was pretty awesome. I was very excited when I found that out. Question number two. Jackie Earle Haley and his character, the Terror, have what in common? Is it A, they both like stealing ice cream from kids, B, they both play the drums, or C, Yokiro Taco Bell? So it's either A or you should pick B.
I'm going to go with the drums.
Yes, that is correct.
Great choices.
Yeah, in real life, he does play the drums, and he did an amazing job on the show. Okay, in the last episode that we saw, episode number 12, the tick calls the VLM Very Large Man what? Is it A, a vastly legitimate mass, B, a very legal muffin, or is it C, Bob's Big Boy? You would want to go with the last one on this one, which is C.
Going to go with Bob's Big Boy.
Bob's Big Boy. It was a funny line, and I really enjoyed it. There you go. $25.
Nice. Great commentary, Pete.
All right, guys. Really, as we all know, tomorrow is a new comic book day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the next installment of Rise of the Black Panther. I've been enjoying it. I can't get enough Black Panther lately. I've seen the movie 3 times in the theater now, and... And then I went back and watched the kind of stop motion thing they had on BET, and I can't get enough. I've got a Black Panther problem at this point.
Nice. Oh, great. What a startling confession from Pete LePage. I'm looking forward to a new book, Gideon Falls, coming out from Image by Jeff Lemire. It's a scary book. It scared Pete out of his mind.
Yeah, we
read it.
Really freaked out by it.
And so, if there's anything that can break him from his Black Panther addiction, I think it's this scared straight comic book, Gideon Falls.
Yeah, we should mention actually that we do a new bonus podcast that's in the feed called The Stack that comes out every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. So there is a review of Gideon Falls and a bunch of other things that you can listen to there if you want to download it. I'm looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man 697 is coming out. This is the last arc that Dan Slott is doing on the title. Despite all of the terrible arcs for Amazing Spider-Man we talked about, Dan Slott's run has been great. I'm sad to see him go, but he always does insane things when he really leads into it, so I cannot wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
Griffin, what are you looking forward to?
I mean, it's a later issue coming out tomorrow. I'm still waiting to read the first issue for when it's collected. I'm excited to read the Jetsons comic.
Nice.
Yeah. I have really enjoyed the Hanna-Barbera stuff
great.
That DC's been putting out. Yeah. Surprisingly great. I think it's really fascinating how they've... Those Hanna-Barbera cartoons were so largely lazy about taking archetypes and very often just stealing other sitcoms and repurposing them in different sort of clothing. And I think the way those DC comics have gone back to the human sort of characteristics behind those archetypes and grounded them doesn't feel gimmicky. Like, I mean, the Flintstones is unbelievable.
Oh, man, it was so good. Yeah.
So funny. It's such great commentary.
Yeah, like. And I'm just reading at Time Delay now the compilation of the DC Hanna-Barbera mashup with the Banana Splits and the Suicide Squad and all those sort of annuals. That stuff is so good. I thought I would avoid reading all of it like the plague, and now I'm all in on every title.
The Batman Elmer Fudd thing was so good.
Yes, that's next in my stack of shades to read. Yeah.
Don't spoil it, dude.
Yeah.
Don't
do it. Yeah, I'm not gonna, you know what? I'm not going to do is spoil it.
Now I know that Batman meets Elmer Fudd.
Or do they?
Or are they the same person?
I mean, it's good to be.
Plug your stuff, Griffin. What should people check
Plug
out?
Plug my stuff. Tick all 12 episodes on Amazon. 10 more episodes coming at an indeterminate date. I host a podcast called Blank Check with Griffin and David. That's about movies. And I'm also on this show, Our Cartoon President, an animated show on Showtime where I play Jared Kushner.
Nice. What a dream role.
What's that like to channel?
It's great. I hate that guy. Yeah. And it is very cathartic to voice him. Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome.
They I went into audition. They were like, we have a problem where we feel like a lot of people are making him too sympathetic. And I was like, I can promise you I won't do that. He is a stain on my Jewish people. I'm ready to take him down.
Yeah. Cool. We'll check out all of that. Also, to plug a couple of things before we go, next week on the show, our guest is Ivy Noel Weir, the creator of Archival Quality. So that should be pretty awesome. Yeah. Also, the show is free to listen to and free to come see, but it does cost us a little bit of money to do. So if you'd like to throw money in the literal hat over there or online, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Additionally, we do a lot more podcasts. As we mentioned, we have a regular Riverdale podcast that you can subscribe to at Riverdale After Dark. Also, we're going to be launching a Krypton podcast called After Krypton.
Oh, man.
We're going to talk about Superman's grandpa.
Finally, we can get a look at him.
Oh, this is going to
suck. Pete is so excited, he's losing his fucking mind over here.
It sucks so bad.
Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for the podcast more. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Eamon Bell, Tom Dar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and O'Reilly Trahan. We want to thank Griffin for being on the show.
Boothman Pride.
But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for coming on. Out.